Hi, Jamie Davis here from the Disaster Podcast. We're back with another segment here, and we're in EMS World Expo in Las Vegas with our 2015 podcast studio, thanks to our good friends of Physio Control, and also thanks to our good friends at Paragon Medical Education Group. And we have Dr. Joe Holly with us here, as we all often do here on the show. And of course, my amazing co-host and right-hand person, Sam Bradley.
Thank you, Jamie. It's early in the morning, and you could probably tell it's a little quieter than it usually is, because we had the great... Dr. Joe is so busy doing his thing that we had to corral him before the show floor even opened. And that's what we want to talk about, Joe, because you're doing something extremely important and extremely unique over there in your secret squirrel booth. So
You're right. Why
don't you tell people about that?
Well, good morning. It's great to be here at EMS World, as always. And the studio is amazing. So thank you to Physio for awesome studio. What we're doing is actually demoing some fairly new medical devices, which is not anything special or unique, I don't think, except the way we are doing it. And we are doing it in a secluded booth, but we're using cadavers, as we are prone to do at Paragon,
yes,
for the maximum amount of realism in demonstration, education, etc. So it's been we worked yesterday. We'll be working on the floor today, the entire time that the showroom floor is open today, showing, letting folks get some hands-on experience with these really cool new products, and a chance to sort of talk about and see the thing in action and actually understand the physiology of what's going on, as you can only do with real tissue as opposed to plastic.
Yeah, and this is something that you all have been, you know, really leading the charge with, and it's you're getting a lot of traffic. You were saying over 100 people coming through yesterday?
Yeah, we had 115 people
Wow.
through there yesterday,
yeah,
which surprised
Wow.
even me, because it was super busy. And yes, it's never been done on the vendor floor before at any event anywhere that we can find out about. And I think has been a really unique opportunity for folks to not just go by the booth and take a look at something and hold it in their hand, but to actually take that item and put it to work as it's designed to be put to work, and have an opportunity to really get an in-depth understanding of not only how it works, but what it actually feels like to use, and know that it's not some specialized plastic thing that they're working on, but it's the real McCoy.
Real deal.
And I don't sense anybody's intimidated by the fact it's a cadaver. I mean, we're all EMS professionals.
Correct. And no, nobody's been, I think, the least bit uncomfortable at all that I've seen come through there. We're obviously very respectful and very careful how we present that. And I think nobody's coming there that doesn't know what we're doing. The nice thing is we don't have a tremendous amount of exposure and that sort of stuff for people to worry about. Obviously, we've addressed all those issues. So everybody has seemed to have been very comfortable in the setting, and I think has stayed focused on the educational experience and not been distracted, if you will, by the cadaver experience. So.
And this is something that you all at Paragon really focus on, is that experiential training, whether it's an active shooter drill where you actually put them in high stress situations to understand what it would be like to actually have to go into that situation with actively injured individuals, and life-saving skills at the test. And this is just another part of that, using live tissue or using actual human tissue to demonstrate things, whatever the product might be. Now this harkens back to, and I'm sorry, my car is getting broken into now. So we've got a lot of ambulances on the show floor here, and somebody stepped on his key fob next door.
One might hope he finds it quickly.
We'll hope he finds us quickly. We'll be right back. we'll pause there for a moment while we sit here and wait.
I hope the guy that has the alarm.
He's opening the hood now to disconnect the battery.
He's disconnecting the battery.
There he goes.
That's pretty funny.
Wow.
All right.
Oops.
Well. And we're back. Sorry about that, but everything and anything can happen here. It's a live recorded event. So, but I was talking, Joe, about the fact that this is part of your experiential training. That
correct.
You know, this is using this human tissue is the only way, in your belief, and I think I agree with you, that people can get an actual feel for what's going on. Mannequin heads are great, but they're all pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. You don't have anterior airways. You don't have strange strange anatomical things going on mm-hmm. because everyone's slightly different.
That's right.
Well, I might add too that paramedics don't generally get, I mean, if you're in a teaching hospital or something, you might have cadaver labs as an mm-hmm. option, but mm-hmm. in my world, most paramedic programs don't have that option.
Sure.
We don't get the ability to work with cadavers. So now, if they come here to the shows, you can provide that for them. And of course, we've talked a number of times about, you know, I've interviewed a lot of those people coming mm-hmm. out of the larger labs, and they're just amazed, not only with the equipment they get to use, but the fact that it's so much different. Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember the one guy that was saying he could not intubate. He was just, not intubate until he got to your lab and was able to get it the first time just because he got the right feel for it. And he says, I haven't missed a tube since. And I thought that was just mind blowing. Mm-hmm. So there's just such a benefit to that you're giving people now that they may not have gotten.
And that's exactly our goal is you know, I think you can spend a lot of time training with lesser material, whether that's, you know, passively watching a DVD and taking a little quiz afterwards. But I really think that the retention of that is virtually zero. And you know, sure, it's not expensive, but, you know, you get out of it what you put into it. Mm-hmm. So you didn't spend much on it, you got very little out of it, and you really probably wasted your money. And I think that if you really want to be good at what we do, and our patients deserve us being really good at what we do, that immersive experience is absolutely essential to making people comfortable in an often chaotic environment, and knowing and having the confidence and experience to be able to realize that there are anatomical differences in people, and that I know how to handle this because I've spent enough time doing those really life-saving interventions that you only get a chance to do really on human tissue. That's just the only way you're really going to learn how to do those and how to handle those as you should.
Well, for a few minutes, and I know we did a whole podcast on this, but I think it was fascinating. You got some research going on. You're rethinking CPR yet again, mm-hmm. and you're kind of on the cutting edge of that, and I think that's pretty exciting.
It is pretty exciting. One of the things that we're working on is we have been involved in a lot of CPR research. We are currently working to make a cadaveric model that will reproduce the things that we've seen elsewhere so that we have a platform for further research in CPR. And by that I really mean, can we show the same changes in pressures and flows and that sort of stuff from different CPR techniques, etc., so that we can have a model that we can use to try different things on and actually see that the flows are through the brain are better than they were doing CPR this way. So part of what we've had some really interesting times with has been heads up or gravity assisted CPR. And interestingly enough, what we're finding is that you actually get better flows through the brain if the head is up, with a couple of caveats. And the first caveat is you have to be doing very high quality CPR because you have to generate enough of a cardiac output and a blood pressure to overcome the elevation of the head. You got to pump blood upstream. But you can do that if you're doing very high quality CPR, and the benefits for the patients, especially their brains, is substantial. So it goes back to the fundamental is incredibly important, and we can take advantage of other things, but we got to have that fundamental being done.
It just seems counterintuitive because medics have always learned, well, you get blood flow if you put the head down, which seems logical.
Sure.
Now it's a whole, but you got to understand all the medical dynamics.
It's about, and this is what is really being required of our new paramedics and the new paradigm for advanced care in the pre-hospital environment, mm-hmm. is we need to not just understand the old, this is the way we've always done it model. But we also need to understand the actual physiology of what's happening with the patient. And this is where this heads up model comes in. Because yes, you do get more blood flow with gravity to the brain, but you also get an increased intracranial pressure.
Correct.
And that intracranial pressure is inhibiting or is stopping the cerebral perfusion pressure from being effective. Correct?
Correct.
So by lifting up, you get less intracranial pressure and the cerebral perfusion pressures are better.
The gravity assist on that seems to be much more important on the draining blood out of the head than it does getting blood into the head.
Okay.
My perspective on that is that this is a closed system, and once it is full of blood, you can generate all the pressure you want. You can't get anything else to go in.
Right.
So you've got to get it out. And actually what we've learned is that this sort of heart-brain connection is really a siphon system. And yes, you need pressure pushing blood into the head, but you need suction,
negative
pulling blood out of the head, and that both those components are quite valuable, and that actually gravity seems to be much more effective on the pulling it out of the head than it does on putting it into the head. So yes, counterintuitive, because I learned the same thing, right? Put your feet up and your head down because you're trying to flow blood into the head. It does flow blood into the head. It doesn't flow blood out of the head. and while that's beneficial until you sort of fill the head up with blood, after that it's actually detrimental. So it's just an interesting, you know, as we learn more, things change. It's the nature of medicine.
I remember talking to Norm Rooker yesterday, and he's an old dinosaur like me. In fact, we started right about the same time. But he got off talking about what CPR was like then.
Mm-hmm.
And there just wasn't, in paramedicine in general, there wasn't a lot of research in it. Well, this makes sense. Let's put everybody on a backboard and put two IVs in them, and this is how we do CPR, whether they like it or not. And then over time, and in EMS in general, so much research now is being done that, first of all, we're finding out that what we were doing wasn't always the best thing.
Mm-hmm.
And taking CPR as an example, we're saving so many more people now. And they're coming out of the hospital neurologically intact, which is what's really important. And it's fascinating to see that change. And now here you go on yet another mission to make it better. I mean, it's going to be amazing to see what this looks like in 10 or 15 years.
This is a shift, Joe, isn't it, in medicine in general over the last, 20 to 30 years towards
really
evidence-based practice.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't something that's just EMS. All of medicine has been moving in this direction.
Right. Absolutely right. And I think that's a good thing. You know, it's trying to do things that we have the science to show that what we're doing is better. It applies to backboards and spinal motion restriction and all that sort of stuff just as well. You know, we've been very dogmatic about our approach to everybody gets tied to a backboard and, you know, lays on it for 5 hours until their, you know, x-rays are okay. And in reality, that's absurd. Most people don't need that. Exactly. And so our abundance of caution has, you know, produced unrecognized or unwanted consequences, as those things often do, of people who got a whole lot more x-rays than they really needed and were a lot more uncomfortable for a lot longer period of time and really probably wasn't necessary in the first place. So a much more thoughtful approach of sort of looking at it and trying not to say it's either all this or all that, but for a few people, yes, they do need that. For most people, they don't need that. Here's a way for you to make those calls. And I think that fall is going to fall on our pre-hospital providers who are can't do things dogmatically. My guys all the time are saying, you know, I backboarded the guy because my lieutenant said so. And I'm like, oh, seriously?
Yeah.
That
changing
is not
the
reason to do that.
Right.
It's not. Well, we've always done it, though. It's also not the reason to do that. So, you know, it requires people to think and exercise some judgment. And for many people, that's a challenging thing to do. But what we hope to do is give them the tools to be able to make that judgment and realize that it's not as hard as they thought it was. And it really does make sense. And it's the right thing to do. And that's what's expected from our people nowadays. And that's, I think, in many cases, that's just a change from where we were 20 years ago.
And disaster medicine's changing, too. I mean, I know you said Jim's at an active shooter event that you all are running. That whole system has changed because of the research into what happened at Sandy Hook, what happened in the battlefield situations with bullet injuries and things. All of that science and research coming together to say, we just can't stage.
Right.
We have to get EMS into the warm zone to provide life-saving care. And that has also sprung out of this research-driven approach.
Absolutely. And it, you know, it really is changing not only what we do on the individual patient, but how we handle individual incidents and scenarios and scenes and large-scale events. All of those things are changing in what we have to do in order to provide the best care we can for patients, and to do so in a way that's thoughtful and safe, and yet is much better, much more efficient, much quicker than what we're currently doing, our current practices.
Well, you talk about a culture change. That was a hard sell. I mean, there's still people
sure
that are naysayers about, well,
of course,
you get a cadre of cops that can protect the fire guys. It isn't a lot of training on their part other than to know how to move into a scene and be safe.
Sure.
But you have to convince them that they are safe.
Sure.
And that's where the research comes
well,
in.
Well, not only that, but this is where the training comes in.
Absolutely.
This is where you just can't tell them that this is how we're going to do it. But you have to train together with the police department, with the hospital system, with everybody, so that everyone knows their place and everyone understands someone else's job, so that you trust the police officer that they're going to have your back while you get down and start helping this patient, whether it's applying a tourniquet or needle decompression or whatever it needs
to
happen.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to some extent, our patients and the public expects that of us. We can't stand around while something bad's going on. That's our job, to go take care of that. And the public's expectation of us is that we are prepared and we are ready to do what it is that we do. And I think the idea of saying, well, I'm gonna stand around here and wait until five more police officers show up, et cetera, is absurdity.
Well, we talked yesterday, because we talked about Urban Shield, which is a local event that we do, that it has the same effect. It's breaking down those silos. It's telling the cops, you just don't need to be cops, you also need to have some skills. So we give them tourniquets, and if they happen to get to the patient first, they know how to put it on.
Sure.
So, and we have a better understanding of how the cops function. So all of that, and that's what you said, Jamie, is having an understanding of what everybody else is doing. And when you get out there, we're all going to be out there together, and it's better to practice that ahead of time so it isn't this huge mystery and nobody knows what they're doing. That's not the time to discover that.
Sure.
So train as you play.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And that's what you're doing.
I think it's a lot of sort of trying to transition people from a very narrowly focused view of what their function is to a much broader perspective, to appreciate what the whole thing is about. And I sort of liken it to, you know, working your way through a field of 8 foot tall grass. You know, you have no idea where you're going except that way. If somebody could just stick their head up at some point and go, hey, we need to be over in that direction, not over here, everybody can sort of start moving that way, right? And giving everybody that perspective that they need to sometimes sort of step back a little bit and look at the much bigger picture and realize, hey, there's a way that we can make this do better. And there's even actively involved in the scene, there's a redirection of resources and places we're trying to go and what we're trying to get accomplished, so that we're not all working in our little silo and oblivious of what's going on around us. It's back to situational awareness,
right? Well, and it's back to
as
that,
it always is.
It's back to that a practice I've always advocated when I educate students in saying, you know, there is nothing wrong with stopping what you're doing, taking a breath, and looking at the whole situation again from top to bottom.
Sure.
And with a patient, with a scene,
absolutely,
with a situation, all of those things sometimes often benefit, I think, from the pause. And I know that, you know, as a physician in an ER situation, it can get hectic when you've got two nurses doing different things on this side of the patient and something going over here, and you've got the airway being managed by respiratory. And sometimes you need to say, hold on a second, and let's stop and make sure we're all doing the right job.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it making certain that everybody's working toward the same endpoint is very important. And I think it's, we all, and I think, you know, EMS especially, because we're used to working by ourselves, whether it's EMS and fire sort of doing two different functions, or now we've incorporated law enforcement and others in there, you know, that everybody's used to having their own little job. And the thought is, that's not my territory. I'm not going to do that. That's you. And a realization that that's not really how it is anymore. We have to be a team to make this work like it's supposed to work, and I need to understand what you need to do, and you need to understand what I need to do, so that we both can work together to accomplish those goals.
Well, and you're bringing in different levels of expertise. Cops think differently than we do, but
absolutely,
maybe they have skills we don't. Are we always really focused on scene safety and situational awareness? No. We focus on that patient. We could have a bad guy right behind us with a gun and not even see it.
Sure.
So that's what they do. So you put all those talents together, it's not only, I think, safer for everybody, but you have a bigger contribution of great skills that Absolutely. Are, again, focused on Absolutely. Taking care of that patient
yeah,
need, and each
need,
other.
You need all those skill sets to do it well and do it effectively and do it safely. And I think it's just a recognition that any one person or one group doesn't have all those skill sets, no matter how much you train. That's why we need to train together, and that's why we need to practice those events so that you recognize, I don't have that skill set. I need somebody here who does have that skill set that can help take care of that problem.
And I have learned so much. I mean, the training that I do prior to the EMS people going out in Urban Shield is with the military. And that's another group of people mm-hmm. that have a very different perspective.
Absolutely.
And just learning, you know, about packing wounds and putting on tourniquets, mm-hmm. learning how they do it mm-hmm. and some of the techniques they use to stop bleeding immediately, like putting you got a ephemeral bleed, you stick your knee down in there mm-hmm. until you can go get your tourniquet yeah. out. Just little things like that. So we all benefit by it.
Absolutely.
We all learn from each other.
So Joe, we could talk about this as usual all day, but I know you've got to get back to what you're doing, setting up for another 100 plus people today, maybe?
Probably.
Yeah. So where can folks find out more about what Paragon's doing? Maybe find out how they can bring you in to provide this research, evidence-based approach to experiential training.
Sure. So Paragon is on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com. That's probably the best place to reach us. You can contact us through there. We're on Facebook as well. You can reach us through the Disaster Podcast, as always, and our Twitter feed is ParagonMedEDU.
Excellent. Sam, how about you?
Well, you can find me in the usual social media places, Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, and certainly on disasterpodcast.com. And we certainly hope you come to the site. If you've got questions for Dr. Joe and some of this stuff, or any of us, or let us know what you would like to hear, we'd love to hear that. And Jamie.
Podmedic@mac.com is my email address, Podmedic on most social media outlets out there, and of course at disasterpodcast.com, where we want you to come back, leave a comment on this and all of our episodes, and let us know what you want to hear more of. Maybe you have a question for Dr. Joe about how Paragon could do something specific in your system for a specific type of event you're preparing for. They can do that, and you can ask those questions over at our site too. So come over to disasterpodcast.com. It's been a great episode.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of things, and Joe is here demonstrating
yet
again
that
this type of medicine is just not what we're expecting sometimes.
No, and we've had, we're almost pushing 2 years now, and that's pretty exciting. I mean, we've had so many great guests on, and we're corralling many more, because everything we do shows that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.